because I think it's imperative that we speak up, speak out about what we have witnessed, because this is the truth. And the truth is that organizations like SCAN are quite often in the way.
Well, the truth is it not that you've had a couple council members endorsing this, to wit, Rotkin and Sugar, is that right? Or?
Well, I like to see it above board.
They haven't actually come out directly.
You know, and they've been requested. I'll say this for Mr. Rotkin. He was visible and vocal from the start.
So he has endorsed it.
Yeah, you bet.
And
I mean,
Sugar,
that would have to qualify
as endorsement. Has Sugar endorsed it?
Tepidly, behind the scenes.
What about Mr. Christopher Crone?
Behind the scenes.
Oh,
you bet. As for Fitzmaurice ran on a pro rent control platform. Now, they can all, if they want, dispute what I'm just saying, but that's my sense. In the background, rent control always had support. In fact, before it was launched, I made a series of calls, including the SCAN, way before it was launched. This is no surprise to anybody that rent control came down when it did. All right, but to me, to sit around and wait for task forces and polls when the achievement could happen was not, to use a phrase that I heard in a reference to a previous SCAN meeting, not the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
The way to go is you do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're doing it, and people can get in touch with you through what phone number?
457-2670. I'd like to come back to the borders thing for a little bit.
Sure,
what's your position on it?
Well, my position is, based upon my research, which is not extensive, but I have yet to hear it contradicted, of 2 or 3 years ago when I learned that Barnes & Noble and Borders control 82% of the retail market in the state, I became very concerned that this kind of control by stores like Borders and Barnes & Noble is ultimately going to lead to a massive shrinkage of opportunities for publishers. Now, this doesn't take into account, you know, online stuff, and that's another matter as well. But I'm talking about the ability of publishers to even publish books if they're gonna have to compete. If little bookstores have to compete with huge bookstores, which can do these you know, loss leader discounts, which Borders and Barnes and Noble can do, and they're also engaged in lawsuits, which it's considered to be. I mean, I've not delved into the lawsuits in detail, but I tend to believe that they're probably engaged in unfair labor practices and unfair, you know, display practices. It is a case of corporate power, which should be curbed. And I think the community should have something to say about large national chains that want to set up their shop downtown. I'm talking about the community now, not the city council.
Give me a suggestion, Robert,
of
who you would suggest for a 16,000 square foot ground level space
that would be
the corner of SoCal and Pacific. Give me a suggestion.
That would be great for a homeless shelter, I think.
No, let's lay it out in reality. And so then, in its infinite wisdom, the Santa Cruz City Council, with endless task forces, is going to decide what type of business and what the qualifiers are going to be, on what basis.
No, it's not so much
on
that.
On what basis, who's righteous enough to move into downtown Santa Cruz?
Well, there should
be... And then, of course, this is going to ensure that they're going to make a profit.
Well, I mean, I look at the people who are opposing this, other than yourself, and I see people like, you know, Schmidt of the Chamber of Commerce, a bunch of out-of-town real estate hacks. And I see people who are, you know, they got money in their eyes and money in their fists, and they want a piece of the corporations that are coming in. And frankly, I'm not sympathetic to that. I'm just not.
Let's look at even prior to the internet, prior to the integrated circuit revolution. 100 years ago, you had Woolworths, you had JCPenney's moving national, you had Montgomery Ward, you had companies that were doing breakthrough work in mail order. Oh, by the way, I want to throw this out. I retain the right on a personal level to take whatever position on an issue I want.
Oh, you're under arrest.
And to be right or wrong, and to modify my position as I see fit. To me, what it's all about, and I think SCAN indicates this very clearly, SCAN is far, I'll use this phrase, goon squad mediocrity, and I'm not going to endorse goon squad mediocrity.
Well, I think Chamber of Commerce is even more goon squad, frankly.
This wee stuff. So I am nonpartisan. I've been nonpartisan for years.
Here's the point.
The candidate?
Bob, I don't think, I understand that. Bob, I don't think that national chains are excluded from coming in. It's just they should be subject to review.
Well, give me an example of who is righteous enough and on what basis.
Well, I think a store, for instance, that sold all kinds of general things, like a Ford's or a JCPenney's or a Montgomery Ward's, I think they'd be fine. And I don't think they would be opposed By the merchant community here.
Now, Santa Cruz, downtown Santa Cruz, and I'm going to say again that I've yet to hear from the so-called leadership, because they're elected, I've yet to hear them tout the significance of the hemp renaissance in downtown Santa Cruz and how significant that is on a national and international level. That Santa Cruz within a month is going to have 3 hemp shops.
Well, let's hope they do.
Okay.
And let me kind of move you off into the side, because I got to go to the next caller.
Yeah.
Hopefully there will be.
Okay, I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right. Santa Cruz downtown is about tourists and students. I think it would be to Bookshop Santa Cruz's benefit. And I think they would, their support is long withstanding and established. I don't think they have anything to be threatened by a more mainstream bookshop. I understand they offer CDs and videos. Obviously, this is a company that has figured out a formula that they could go national with, and I think that they deserve the right to play it out. If it works out like Boston Market, they'll fail.
Well, I think the community also has the right to consider what its impact will be on local businesses. That's true, too.
Well, then, like I say, last thing I'll say is if that's true, Robert, and if the way this bill was put out, this ordinance, which was an after effect of a lease, then the city of Santa Cruz should demand a 50% public stake in Bookshop Santa Cruz.
Interesting. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Well, you can't stop that perennial gadfly battling Bob LaMonica, and you shouldn't, because he's got provocative and well-articulated questions that they don't just come from, Mike Schmidt of the Chamber of Commerce or the Downtown Association. They come from an individual without a huge property stake. Here we have an incoming call.
Hello?
Hi, you're on free radio.
Hello?
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 Yes.
Am I on the air?
You are on the
air.
Well,
I'm calling from a payphone, so I can't hear you. But I just want to announce to everybody, we only got 3 more weeks to get this hate-free zone initiative on the ballot. I'm downtown taking a break from my mediations and trial preparations and so forth for a couple hours, and I've got extra clipboards. So I'll be near this Bookshop Santa Cruz if people want to come pick up clipboards.
Now, can you hear me now?
I can hear you, but I have to hold this cord into the phone.
Okay, well, let me tell you then that we also know you're going to trial shortly on your long-delayed lawsuit against the Santa Cruz Police Department.
Yeah, very long.
Andy Crane.
Stalled.
That's on what, November 1st, Monday?
Yes. Well, that's what it appears like so far.
So it should be in state, and I guess you're on the city council agenda for a settlement coming up on Tuesday as well.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
Now that we should hopefully get a word from Beggarbacker Becky Johnson, who's been monitoring the city council agenda, and maybe talking about that soon.
Sure.
I know we also conveyed on the air your concern about this letter, which indicates that Officer Howes is doing some pretty fancy politicking to make sure that them dirty homeless people can't be sleeping in their vans in the neighborhoods.
I'm pretty sure that the American Constitution prevents there being either a military political party or a police political party. But since in Santa Cruz we have a police political party, their candidate Hernandez won after battering me, it seems that they're going around and going into neighborhoods and actually telling them the law is other than what it is, or telling them laws that don't exist, and getting them organized to democratically represent themselves on based on false premises and false laws. I mean, you know, there is a camping ordinance for Jim Howe to go on and organize that neighborhood, telling them there is no way that they could ever give a ticket and they can't even give a warning and everything, to me is treason to the Constitution. It's something very serious, and I think we all need to be very much on alert.
Right.
But this is what we have in Santa Cruz. We have a police political party, and they need to be reminded of the U.S. Constitution. I just want people to come and realize that rent control initiative, we've got very few days left, and the Hate Free Zone initiative, we're way behind, and we got only a few weeks left, so folks, come on down.
Is there a number they can call you at?
I'm on the street.
Okay, if you want to give a call and want to be of assistance in this...
425-4499.
425-4499.
That's a volunteer call-in number.
Hey, thank you very much, David.
Thanks a lot, Robert.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So he's down there on the streets near the Bookshop Santa Cruz. You can always register your thoughts on that issue either way at the bookshop if they'll let you in. I, of course, would be arrested if I walked through the door, but who knows? I may do that one of these days anyway. And I'm always hopeful that, like the Java House, which after 7 years of barring me finally let me back in, explaining that, we'd meant to anyway, but just didn't mention it to you, perhaps the Bookshop Santa Cruz will see that maintaining a blacklist is not the best way to improve their credentials in the activist community.
As I said, I've worked with Neil Coonerty recently. We have no trouble talking to each other. We have no trouble working on common issues. And I'm hopeful that this these past matters will ultimately be resolved, but at the moment, they're not. Regarding another matter that came up recently and that I brought to the attention of all of you out there, the Citizens Police Review Board, which some regard as a sort of a sad joke, even under the new appointees of Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, because they still aren't going anywhere with a lot of the issues, has, they are independently investigating. That is to say, they've hired an independent investigator through the city manager, a woman named Diana Christensen. She is now reviewing, going in and talking to people. Actually, they're going in and talking to her. And the Santa Cruz Five had initially not been willing to cooperate with this investigation because the city attorney had stated it's all going to be confidential anyway. Now that the Citizens Police Review Board and Diana Christensen are assuring them that it will be made public one way or another, or that that is their intention, they are indeed talking to the independent investigator about events that happened on May 22nd. And for those who don't know, that's the demonstration against the bombing of Kosovo, where our very own Representative Farr was being hosted and touted at a stuff-your-face banquet Democratic Party fundraiser at the McPherson Center on May 22nd, at the same time as bombs were falling on Belgrade. Of course, now, I'd like to point out, bombs are falling on Chechnya. Thank you very much, Moscow. I think we should also turn out to deal with that one. That's another whole can of worms. But in any case, the Santa Cruz Five are getting the, and actually, it's not so much the Santa Cruz Five, they're under indictment. That's the police department's response to abuse. Accuse them of abuse, they arrest you and have you taken to court. However, the Citizens Police Review Board, for the first time in its history, is having an independent person come in and investigate cases. And that person, Diana Christensen, comes to town Wednesday, Fridays, and Saturdays. And you can leave a message for her at the Citizens Police Review Board number 420-6295, if you are a witness to this or have information you want to give. I've asked that this whole information process be as open as possible. You're allowed to bring a person with you if you'd like. You're allowed to bring a tape recorder with you. If you do, you have to file a complaint because she has some sort of technical reason, supposedly, that you're not supposed to record it unless you are filing the complaint and making a copy for your use. But Argue did that, and he said he was satisfied with her. I spoke to her informally yesterday, but I haven't yet testified because what I saw was, I think, not terribly helpful one way or the other. But I do suggest that you might want to get in touch with her. But regarding another complaint about Steve Argue that happened about a year ago, some interesting information has come to light. This is the case of Officer Garner and the arrest of homeless activist Steve Argue, who is also a vendor for the newspaper Street Spirit, which homeless people sell on the streets for a dollar. This paper he was selling at the in front of New Leaf Market the day after a protest at the town clock against police murder of various people throughout the country, thousands now, and the relatives have gotten together in a thing called the Stolen Lives Protest and Project that is was displayed most recently at the Veterans Hall, October 1st through 3rd, if you were there, until some right-wingers at the Veterans Hall insisted that it be removed from the front of the area. In any case, Argue, who is actually just walking in the door now, was selling the street newspaper. He was approached by Officer Garner, who demanded he stop because he didn't have a license. He told Garner where to get off, in essence. No, I won't do that. And Garner shortly thereafter threw him to the ground, smashed his head into the pavement, gouging his forehead, handcuffed him, took him off to jail. There he was held 4 days, most of it in solitary, and released without any charges. Again, the original charge, the original reason, which was admitted in all the police reports and in subsequent interviews with Garner and with witnesses, was selling a paper without a permit. The Police Review Board considered two complaints about this issue, about the false arrest, and dismissed them both. That's both the old board, before they changed their membership when the new council members came in, and the new board. But more significant than that, Chief Steve Belcher sent me a letter, because one of those complaints was mine. And he, in this cover letter, he explained that the reason Steve Argue was arrested had to do with his blocking the sidewalk. This, of course, was not true, because had he been arrested for blocking the sidewalk, he would have seen the code section involving blocking the sidewalk mentioned on the booking sheet or in the officer's report. And it was in neither. In fact, repeatedly referred to in the report, and the reports, which Steve Argue and I were able to get only 8 months after the fact, was the fact that it was the cause for the arrest was not having a permit, which is, of course, a bad reason for an arrest, because there's an exception for street newspapers. The officer was wrong. W-R-O-N-G. He was wrong. Now, we all have the right to be wrong, but when the police chief insists that he was not wrong and covers it up by saying that there was a different reason for the arrest than appears on the police records, we have a situation of some seriousness. Hence, I filed a complaint on September 3rd about Police Chief Belcher's involvement in this. I also pointed out that this complaint could not be studied appropriately by either the police department or the city manager, but should be referred to some independent investigator or the city council, or maybe some out of the city jurisdiction, because it involved the highest officer in the police department, the man who runs the police department, Police Chief Steve Belcher. Well, the Citizens Police Review Board, instead of discussing this matter in a sort of behind-the-scenes schmoozerama, Citizens Police Review Board head Arnie Leff kind of came back, not even having met substantially with his other numbers on the board, and announced what they were going to do was they were going to refer it to the city manager, which I didn't think was a very good idea, but they did. And here is the result. Here's a letter from the city manager dated October 5th, 1999. It's very short. It says, I received your complaint dated September 3rd, 1999. This complaint stems from a complaint that you filed on November 17th, 1998. It appears that you are not in concurrence with the finding of the chief of police in this matter. This case was thoroughly investigated and sent to the Citizens Police Review Board. The CPRB and the chief of police both came to the same conclusionary finding. After a review of the material, it does not appear that there is any new information to consider. Thus, no additional investigation will occur. Sincerely, Richard C. Wilson, City Manager. Now, I suppose, let's take the positive view. He's not saying he's denying the complaint. He's just saying he's not going to investigate it further. But I take this to mean, and I'm going to, of course, check with him on Monday, that he, in essence, is saying there is no further need for any kind of independent view of this complaint. In fact, of course, the key information here was not at all in the complaint, and that is the information that Chief Belcher is claiming that Stephen Argue was in essence arrested for blocking the sidewalk. That it was behavior that was inappropriate, that that the arrest that Officer Garner made was not a false arrest. That it would somehow stand up in court. Now, Steve Argue is with me in the studio, and we have an incoming call. Let's take the call, and then let's take old Steve.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Dan Hopkins.
Hi, Dan.
How you doing?
Good.
Have you been out in the mall today?
I have not.
Oh, there's a lot of stuff going on down here today.
Tell me.
Yeah, they're having a protest at the Gap.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Gap department store there. I think they sell Levi's and stuff like that.
And tell me about it.
There's about... Oh, I'd say 15, 20 people out there. They all got signs and stuff, and some of the signs refer to the sweatshops that they use and, get their clothing and things. And then somehow or another, I guess Gap is part of some larger organization. Mm-hmm. I guess it's called the Fisher Family. And they have something to do with cutting down the redwoods,
mm-hmm.
and killing fish and all this kind of stuff. And anyway, I thought I'd tell you about that.
Mm-hmm.
And... Hey, here's one for you. There's another table out on the mall,
mm-hmm.
and it says help wanted, and it says romantic associate wanted.
Is this your table, Dan?
No, I wish
you
it dog. Was. I wish I would have thought about it.
What are you soliciting for sex under the misleading these poor women?
Yeah,
you?
Right. And so
are
I
you going
up,
after the men now? What are you doing?
Yeah, there's this woman that's a young woman that's running this table, and it says, you know, it has a big red help wanted sign, you know, like you see in windows and stuff, and that. And then it said romantic associate. And then it has, she is taking applications for it and taking pictures of each person and stapling to the application. And I asked her, I said, well, what is this job anyway? You know, because it's like a job, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, well, here's a description of what, if you know, like if you don't come to work on time or if you're kind of just lazy and stuff like that, then that's grounds for dismissal. You know, they have a whole page on these different condition. So then I said, well, still, I want to know what it is, you know. And she says, well, that's between me and the person that I hire. And so it's kind of funny, you know.
Whoa, she's looking for a stud and she doesn't want to say so, eh?
No.
Soliciting in public. I'm going to have to call Officer Howes and see what he has to say about this.
Yeah. And then yesterday I was listening to the radio, you know, one of the largest radio stations here in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about police and this thing about where the police can't sue a complainant anymore.
That's correct.
Federal judge.
And actually, I have a news item on that I was going to read. It was on the front pages of the San Francisco Examiner.
Right.
I could probably read that to you now.
Okay.
Let me see if I'm thumbing through my clippings, looking even as we speak.
While you're looking for it, did you find it already?
I got it here.
Okay, go ahead.
It reads like this. It's, cops lose a legal shield. Judge says they can't sue over complaints. In second case, San Francisco officer told to pay legal fees. And what the ACLU is heralding as a significant constitutional victory against law enforcement intimidation, a federal judge has struck down a 17-year-old California law that allows police officers... Hang on a second here. It does allow police officers to sue citizens for filing false complaints. The ruling in Southern California was handed down Monday, the same day a San Francisco Superior Court judge ordered a San Francisco police officer to pay $52,000 to the attorneys of a woman he had sued under the 1982 law. The woman had accused the officer of police misconduct. It's really a powerful 1-2 punch to what has been a long-standing problem with police officers retaliating against people who file valid complaints, said ACLU attorney John Crew. First, the federal court strikes down the law, then the Superior Court in San Francisco shows there will be a financial consequence for police officers trying to retaliate against people for exercising their First Amendment rights. The California statute... Hang on here. The California statute... the only such law in the country explicitly gave police officers the right to sue people who filed a false complaint against them. U.S. District Court Judge Gary L. Taylor declared that law unconstitutional, ruling it violated citizens' First Amendment right to free speech. However, a police spokesman said the law was necessary to protect officers from people who made false accusations against them. The real question is, how will police officers in the future be able to attempt to clear their good names when there are frivolous charges brought against them by the public that are unfounded and unwarranted, said Kelly Moran, Director of Political Affairs of the California Organization of Police and Sheriffs. Taylor addressed that issue in his ruling, said the judge... Significant protections from false complaints are already afforded to police officers by their internal oversight agencies, in addition to the possibility of perjury charges for false complainants. For those who don't know, whenever you sign a police complaint, you have to sign it under penalty of perjury. We tried to have this struck because it does intimidate people who want to file police complaints, but you do indeed have to say under penalty of perjury. Citizens have a right to file complaints against any government official. The 1982 law was enacted after lobbying by police groups made a special exemption for law enforcement officers, giving them the right to sue citizens who filed complaints that were knowingly false and made with spite, hatred, or ill will. Crew, an expert in police practices at the ACLU in San Francisco, said the law had been used by officers to intimidate people from proceeding with their complaints, creating a chilling effect. To be faced with these sorts of threats has been a major barrier to police reform and, frankly, to getting management in the position to deal with problem officers, he said. He said he has seen a flurry of retaliatory suits by police officers in the last couple years. In the San Francisco case, Betty Evans said she had watched from her apartment peephole as Sergeant Joseph McCloskey kicked a handcuffed man in 1997. She filed a complaint that was later found valid by the Office of Citizen Complaints. McCloskey sued Evans for defamation, asking $25,000 in damages, but dropped the suit after the ACLU came to her defense. Monday, Superior Court Judge David Garcia found the defamation suit without basis and ordered him to pay $52,000 in attorney's fees and costs. In the federal case, Myron Gritchen had filed a complaint with the LA or the Long Beach Police Department saying Officer Gordon Collier had mistreated him in a traffic stop. Collier sent him a letter threatening to sue and asking for money. The ACLU sued Collier, saying the letter violated Gritchen's right to free speech. The federal judge agreed. Larry Roberts, the attorney representing Collier, told the Associated Press that he disagreed with the court's ruling and would take the case to the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. This is the story from the San Francisco Examiner, Friday, October 22nd. Cops lose a legal shield by Julia Chow. On the line with us is Dan Hopkins. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Yeah, I I was listening to that program yesterday about this article you read.
Uh-huh.
And I was shocked at all the people that called in that basically were supportive of the police in every area, you know, and that...
Well, where was this program, Dan?
KSCO 1080.
Well, that's got a kind of a right-wing constituency anyway.
Uh-huh.
Although I'd be surprised. I know there's some people who support Ben Chirko, and in fact, his father, Don Chirko, called me the other day saying Ben was back in jail again, and apparently the Sentinel and the KSCO are all outraged about that, so maybe there are some times when they agree the police aren't always right.
Huh.
You know?
And I was surprised, you know, at all the people that were supportive and that no one called in about some of the things that I've experienced with the police, you know, in the courtrooms and stuff like that.
Well, you better call in, Dan, like you're calling in now. Is there anything more you want to say? Because I'm going to run on you.
No.
We've got like 10 minutes left before they're going to bounce us out of here.
All right, we'll see you.
Thanks a lot. Oh, by the way, before you go, I want to tell people that there, and this is for anyone out there listening, that there are some folks who want to do some tabling for the sleeping band today. I guess we could add the sleeping band commotion to all the rest of the people on the mall. And if you're interested, give a call to 423-HUFF. I know we've heard Bernard is interested in tabling if others are. So call 423-HUFF if you want to do some tabling, and I'll pass the word on to Bernard. Thanks a lot, Dan.
All righty. See you. Bye.
Well, boy, we're coming up against time, and I bet we're going to get more phone calls. But let's try to get a quick word in here from you, Steve. How you doing?
Doing all right.
And Steve, you were up in San Francisco on Friday. In fact, Jim and George, who were with you, or were also up there, were concerned about the arrest and brutalization of individuals around Food Not Bombs. And since 1996, police have generally laid off of Food Not Bombs before they'd arrested over 1,000 people in the previous 10 years for serving free food in San Francisco's Civic Center. And in the hate, after that fine individual Robert Norse went to jail, thank you very much, for serving free food, and Mayor Brown and all the other folks got a lot of bad publicity, they said stay off away from Food Not Bombs, at least on this issue. But apparently, that era of tolerance is over. There were two arrests, numerous citations in the last month, and two arrests at the beginning of the week. And now, I heard from the internet it was three arrests, but you said you saw six people taken into custody?
I believe it was six people, but I don't know for sure. That's a number we put together on the scene, and we didn't actually know people's names or exactly. We didn't know exactly what happened. But
what did you see?
It was at least four people, though. Where did you get this number of three?
The three came from an official communique from Food Not Bombs' Hugh Mejia out of the Coalition on Homelessness. But again, I don't know if he was present or not. And he may have been talking about simply Food Not Bombs workers rather than... I guess what happened, as I understand it from George and Jim, or George, I'm not sure who told me this, one of the two, that you guys had been doing your march, or your October 22nd march against police brutality, repression, and the criminalization of a generation, the Wear Black Day, 2 days ago, up in San Francisco, and you'd kind of come to the end of your march when someone came rushing over and said, Food Not Bombs is under attack.
Yeah, and about 100 of us went running down from the October 22nd police brutality march, and people were outraged that here were people trying to feed hungry people, you know, people who didn't have food, and the police came in and were being how they are, you know.
How many police officers would you say there were?
There were lines of cops. I mean, they were in full riot gear. They came riding up on their motorcycles, and it was a heavy police presence for the distribution of bagels.
How many people were in line for these bagels?
At the time I got there, it was mostly people defending bagels, and the people who were just trying to get bagels were mostly trying to get out of the way, I think, at that point. There was a young homeless person who made the mistake of going up and grabbing a bagel and taking a bite into a bagel, and he unfortunately was one of the people arrested. He was immediately thrown to the ground and arrested after eating this
forbidden bagel. Now, did you actually see this arrest, or did you hear about it?
I saw people being thrown around, and I didn't see exactly what had happened. But this is how that was described to me. I saw the cops just throwing people around. I saw after that, people people locked arms in front of the bagels to protect the bagels.
How many people would you say?
I don't know.
More than 10?
I don't know. There were a lot of people doing different things. I'm not sure how many had their arms locked. There was a big crowd, and I wasn't like up in the front where exactly that was happening.
Did you have your boxing gloves on at the time?
No, I was trying to stay out of the way because I'm out on $20,000 bail on ridiculous stuff going on here, and about to be sentenced on that. So I figured I'll keep this week and a half free without the bail being withdrawn. So, but I was watching what was going on, and I saw a lot of people thrown to the ground. I saw the cops just going insane over the distribution of bagels.
Now, were these the same officers who had been escorting or monitoring the rally and the march? You want to talk a little bit about how the march went and then how this kind of segued into the Food Not Bombs thing?
I don't know. I didn't really pay much attention to the cops during the march.
They weren't very visible?
They were visible. Oh, yeah. They had us surrounded with their motorcycles. I mean, as far as I could tell, they were helping with traffic and all that, you know.
They didn't arrest anybody marching?
As far as I know, not. No. And we had a good number of people. I'm not sure how many.
Yeah, sure. I heard a couple hundred at least.
More than that. It was at least 1,500 people, I think, something around that. Well, I shouldn't say at least that. It could have been like 1,000, somewhere in that ballpark.
So I also heard that the police, in time-honored fashion, I've seen this done time and time again when I was working with Food Not Bombs up in San Francisco in 93, the year that I got many tickets for doing Food Not Bomb work, but the one ticket I decided to take to jury trial they eventually convicted me on was in 93, and I saw them just throwing soup into the gutters. I saw them throwing bagels into the trash. I saw them arresting bagels. I mean, they would lock the bagels up in the vans. What did you see? Anything of that sort?
Yeah, the bagels were dumped all over the ground. Table was destroyed.
Was there any literature there on the table?
Not that I know of. Whatever liquid there was, that was dumped. It was crazy. I mean, they were so busy. They were just attacking these people. They were throwing them to the ground, and everything around them was going to the ground too. People, I don't know how hurt people were, but I'm sure some people got hurt out of it. I mean, these cops were just totally insane.
They were going bananas. Yeah. Well. Hey, we got lots more on our agenda, but the time is really running to coming to an end. Any announcements you'd like to make, Steve?
Yeah, October 31st, 1 o'clock. Come on down to the clock tower. We're going to do a big demonstration for the Santa Cruz 5.
What day is that?
That's Halloween Sunday. Uh-huh. And we'll probably have, looks like we're going to have street theater. We're going to have a good number of people coming in, probably from around the Bay Area. And it'll be a big action. We'll be marching through the streets, street theater, make a big issue of what went on May 22nd and the continuing prosecution of the victims of that, the five people arrested there by the police.
And of course tomorrow at 11 o'clock, for those who want to join the HUF effort, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, to organize the season of protest between Thanksgiving and Christmas against the sleeping ban downtown. We're talking about daily, high-profile, embarrassing protests to let the merchants understand they don't rule the roost here as far as basic civil rights for poor people and denying them in a regular manner, which is what they've been doing, or we're going to try to end the ruling of the roost. Come down to the Rise Zone. That's tomorrow, 11 o'clock, Monday. We're going to be doing some stuff there. Here's a quick incoming call. This will be our last call. Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Yes, and hi. This is your city council report.
Now, you better talk fast. We're about to be evicted here.
Well, first up, at the 3 p.m. session, they will be having a legal conference about David Silva versus the city.
Mm-hmm.
That refers to the September 10th, 1996 incident,
mm-hmm.
in which Andy Crane flung David Silva 11 feet into a pillar outside of City Council chambers. Also, they'll be having item number 16 is about affordable housing in Santa Cruz, and it has something I don't understand at all. Development of Zoning Ordinance Amendment Add In-Lieu Fee Option to the Inclusionary Requirements for Investo Minimum Development.
They're talking about, I think, waiving inclusionary fees for the businesses downtown, but I could be wrong. That is to say, letting the businesses buy their way out of low-income housing requirements yet again. Again, I'm not entirely sure that's accurate, and we're going to have to look at that in the next show, or you can come down to City Council. Yeah. This is the 3 o'clock session day after tomorrow, right?
And the 7 p.m. section is about the big box stores, and that will be at the Civic Auditorium.
Mm-hmm. I see. Is there any indication that the camping ban repeal is getting on the agenda, or has buyers sold us out again?
Not a single indication at all that it's on the agenda in any way, shape, or form.
Well, thank you very much. Anything else you want to report? We got no time. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's it for Bathroom Spears Broadsides. We'll go out on this Peggy Seeger hit of 20 years ago. We got 1 minute left. Sorry. We're going to play our song, Nee, Nee, Nee. But we're gone, and as soon as it's 1:30, it's the Little Red Hen and Company.
Present-day hero, sporting a pinstripe and wearing the regiment's tie. Blood in his eye, the world on his shoulder. Trims his mustache while he's dreaming of destiny's hour. Greedy for power, ready to save the nation and lead us in the fight. Never a doubt that everything he does is right. National hero, neat little man who's been chosen by fate to redeem the national dream, imperial greatness. St. George with a briefcase is looking for dragons to slay, waits for the day. We ask him to save the nation and lead us in the fight. Never a doubt that God is absolutely right. Classical hero, standing alone on the bridge, he's defending the race, setting his face.
Okay, well, I'll check this out. It's about 5:02. We're here in front of the Gap on downtown Pacific Avenue. A couple of signs around. Breakfoot Gap, Shutdown Sweatshop.
And
being intruded upon by a controversial reporter
from
the Free Radio Santa Cruz.
That's First Radio here.
Can you tell us why you're going to be
barricading the Gap today?
I was actually thinking of going in and checking out the Gap and getting their view on this whole demonstration.
You know, the Gap clothes make you look stupid.
I have actually not purchased any Gap clothing. Wait a minute. Now, don't purchase, officers. Don't go in there. For goodness sake, you won't look good in Gap clothing. Wait.
We tried, Robert.
Yes, we did.
Maybe they're shoplifting.
It could be that they are investigating a complaint about, dare I say it, a protest on Pacific Avenue.
Well, we certainly are protesting.
And I would have to agree with that. How long have you been protesting here, Uncle Dennis?
About 2 hours, Robert.
And how many people would you say you have turned away from a legitimate business here and helped to starve the funding that makes the lifeblood of our downtown? I suppose you're against borders as well.
I certainly am against borders. And to answer your first question, Robert, as your sentence ran on and on,
yes,
we've turned about 30 people away from the Gap, and quite a few people have walked out of the Gap without buying anything.
Well, aren't you ashamed? The Gap is a fine store. I mean, well, what exactly do you have against the Gap?
Well, they're owned by the Fisher family, and the Fisher family also owns the Mendocino Redwood Company. The Mendocino Redwood Company.
They have diversified interests.
Yes, the Mendocino Redwood Company purchased logged over completely uneconomic forest lands in Northern California, formerly owned by Louisiana Pacific. And now they're proceeding to even more liquidate a liquidated forest, if you can do that, if you can possibly...
Clear-cutting is the name of the game, son.
Clear-cut. Redwood, then the Mendocino Redwood Company is in it for the bucks.
Well, the sun is out, the sky is bright,
We have virtually no parking spaces in sight. And again, we're approaching the Gap on Pacific Avenue, which apparently is due to expand. They have some additional Fisher Development General Contractor sort of panel set up for the next door store. And the media is just swarming the joint. I think Uncle Dennis is leaning illegally against a lamppost. There are a couple of officers. So, you causing trouble here?
I was just passing the bars. I wasn't saying anything. I was across the street.
I see. Well, there should be three individuals armed to the teeth who are like standing here with
you. Apparently, Sergeant Vogel here noticed that I was back in town. He checked my records out and discovered that there was possibly a warrant for a bicycle ticket.
Failure to pay?
Yes, that would be the case.
That's an infraction, and it's recently been ruled in the Friday case in the courtroom of Judge Art Danner that failure to pay infractions, if he goes with his indicated ruling on Tuesday, which will be issued as a written ruling, are not a basis for a warrant.
Right. In which case, he already said that it's priorable, and they're just going to give me a ticket.
Well, that doesn't sound very exciting. Take him to jail. Come on, I want to see some action here.
Why would I do that, Robert? I'm violating the law. It's an allowable warrant, right?
I've seen officers violate the law before.
Do me a favor and stand back a little bit, okay?
All right.
Thank you. And as a matter of fact, I'd rather you not speak with him right now, okay?
Oh. I'll stand back here. And Sergeant Vogel and his two companions here, officers Wolfango and
Swanick.
You know, I don't recognize you with that haircut.
Really?
Yeah.
I think the cop was pretty cut.
Yeah. In any case, we have a police presence here on the mall in front of the Gap. There are those signs, stop forest and labor exploitation, boycott the Gap, and individuals are passing by, and they're apparently warrant checking one of the protesters. But we've been assured that the officers involved are not going to waste time and money on incarcerating someone on a failure to pay bicycle ticket. We'll see if this actually happens. Well, this looks like an illegal gathering to me here. Well, I'm working at it.
Back to work.
All right, so they're dispersing. I'm trying to assist the police here as they're... just kidding, folks. So, standing at a distance of approximately...
Why?
It is not all but the $104 ticket.
So you get arrested randomly in Santa Cruz if you don't pay a ticket?
I'm going to jail, yeah. Oh, you get to see the excitement. I am going to jail.
Interestingly enough, this is a failure to pay or a failure to appear?
Failure to pay.
Well, then Sergeant Vogel is contradicting himself yet again.
He thought it was horrible, but they said negative OR for $104 ticket.
Well, could be the basis of an interesting lawsuit if anybody were interested later on.
I don't have a driver's license. Do you ever have one? Yes, but if you would like, I assume I'm being detained. Okay, so you just want my state ID?
You have that, that'd be great.
Sure.
I just want to make sure it's you before I arrest you. You know what I'm saying?
So we have a potential arrest happening here, folks. A man is being taken into custody for failure to pay a bicycle ticket. There is a major criminal about to be taken to jail for failure to pay a bicycle ticket. It could be you. Keep that in mind. Can you pay a $104 bicycle ticket? Instead of being released, these individuals are going to spend your time and money taking a man to jail for a bicycle ticket. Could be he was doing what this man is doing here, riding his bicycle down Pacific Avenue. Perhaps the wrong way. That's a $104 crime in Santa Cruz. The usually friendly Sergeant Vogel is the unfortunate means by which this is happening. Let's get some of the reactions from some of the folks in the crowd about this. So, what do you think about that?
I think that's really unnecessary, and the cops have way too much time on their hands.
Yeah, but here's a squad car that's arrived and is now blocking traffic. Again, for this major bicycle criminal, everybody, this may be your only opportunity to see a bicycle criminal. Come on over here, folks. Let's check out the bicycle crime. He's being led off by Sergeant Vogel to his vehicle. In handcuffs, no less. His crime, a unpaid bicycle ticket. Your taxpayer dollars at work, folks.
That Josh is a desperate criminal. Up there saying you want to bail the guy out on the corner.
Let's tell these police officers how much we think of them for their fine work in arresting people for a unpaid bicycle ticket.
I feel safe. We're getting bike criminals off the street.
Gap
slave labor.
And this is all, of course, in front of the Gap, where another protest is going on. The criminal is being put into the back of a squad car. This is also a free radio broadcaster. Could there be some relationship between his being arrested for a bicycle ticket and his being a free radio broadcaster?
According to the officer I just spoke to, if we want to go over and ask him, he's not sure why this person's being arrested.
Really? Officer Swanick over there, the fellow with the gray hair?
Yeah, I just asked him, I said, why is this fellow being arrested and what the warrant is for? And he says, he's not sure.
Related to his political activity, is it?
Not in Santa Cruz. They would never arrest someone in Santa Cruz for their political activity. Not in our town. This is a more far-seeing police force. This is a dangerous bicycle criminal that must be put behind bars. His crime, supposedly not paying a bicycle ticket. Hey, Sergeant Vogel, are you approachable now? Now that the this dangerous criminal has finally been secured,
what can I do for you?
I really want to thank you for making sure that. Well, you can check me for warrants.
I haven't seen you in forever.
How are you?
I'm okay. How about you?
Good, man. Good. Get a new pair of Clarks. The friendly interchange happening after the iron cuffs have been brought out. We now have the velvet gloves.
I don't have any more handcuffs.
Yeah. Hey, the man is without handcuffs. What is to be done? Does anybody have any handcuffs? Oh, you could probably aluminum ball, Officer Swanick's handcuffs, I suggest. So why was this man arrested? We know it was a failure to pay a bicycle ticket as well.